And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight we are blessed with, and I hope I get this right, Mark Borax, who is the author of 2012, Crossing the Bridge to the Future. I read this book and I really liked it. So we've got a lot to talk about. I don't really ask questions. I sort of talk about the different things that are in your book. But welcome, Mark.
Hi, Lori. It's great to be here.
And I'm really excited about this. So usually what we do is we start off by talking about, you know, how you started your journey. Well, when you get the book, you'll read about how he started his journey because that's what his book is about. It's all about his journey. But if you want to just briefly go through, I mean, it really started with the harmonic convergence, which was in 1987. But if you want to talk a little bit about, you know, what sort of started you on this path, that would be great.
Yeah, my book, 2012, Crossing the Bridge to the Future, it opens up at the harmonic convergence in the summer of 1987. And my intense personal experiences on top of Mount Shasta at that time, which led to a kind of a death experience in which I really sank to one of the lowest points in my life. But instead of dying, it was as if maybe I died and I came back or something like that. And that led me to meeting the man who then became my teacher. And so I really tried to use my intense personal experiences in the book as a frame in order to bring in these higher principles that I knew if the higher spiritual principles that we studied took the form of an exciting page-turning adventure that was a real-life story, that the spirit ideas would make it through into the personal realm where they could reach people with more impact. And that's why I told my story the way that I did.
Yeah, it's, you got to admit, it's a pretty exciting story.
Yeah, I mean, living through it once was intense enough, and then having to kind of relive it for years during the extensive editing process was quite an interesting second experience.
I can imagine. You know, I'm going to start at the end where you talk about your afterword, because I think, you know, you bring up a lot of points, you know, about what this was, which is, you know, it portrays a story of a young man's search for answers to the big questions. Are we all part of the grand design? What on earth are we doing here anyway? What's the resounding need of our time? What happens when we die? How can I stop sabotaging myself and become the person I really am? What are love and sex all about? And where must we go? Where must we go to bring on the optimal future of our species? I mean, it's a book about 2012, but it's not a book about the prophecies of where 2012 is going. It's really your journey and how astrology and your teacher and everything that brought you towards this point has been moving us really as a planet, but definitely as your own journey towards this interesting time, which you don't really make a prediction or you don't really make any comments about what you predict will happen or what you think, whether it's going to be something amazing or something
catastrophic.
Thank you. So I think it's a very interesting way to start with the interview. So what do you think? What are we as part of the grand design? Where are we? How do we fit into it?
I think this is one of those choice points in human evolution that comes along every so often through history where much more is at stake. We're at a crossroads very intensely. And what's at stake at this time is the course of the future very specifically. And I believe that people create the fulfillment of prophecy, mm-hmm. or the denial of the fulfillment of prophecy. That I feel that it's up to humanity right now to really take a good, long look at itself on an individual basis. This means each person, to really ask yourself, what future will you create? What world will you create here on earth without stopping yourself by thinking of all the limits that are in the way of what the optimal future could be. And I specifically used my book, The Story That I Tell, the same way that I work with people in my soul-level astrology readings, the same way my teacher worked with me in that first reading I got from him 21 years ago, which is that you have the power inside yourself to make your dreams come true, to align with a core soul force inside you that can then go out there in the world and create an optimal future. And with my book, I didn't want to play the big know-it-all who's going to tell you exactly what's going to happen in 2012. I resent prophecy books like that that say, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, this other thing is going to happen. These are what the prophecies say. My belief about this is that the main relevance of prophecies is to motivate each of us to really dig our feet in and choose to create that existence which is most meaningful for us. And so my whole book is really an attempt to shake people up like a wake-up call and say, look, there is far more power available to bring about a spiritual awakening of mass consciousness. There is a lot of power for this than we've seen for a long, long time. The crossroads is a choice point. The prophecies of 2012, for me, boil down to a tremendous crisis of meaning in which we're all being asked to realize, what are we doing here? And so I used my personal story as a way to try and catalyze a response from my readership as so that when they put that book down, that they should be on fire to ask themselves, what world do they want to create?
Mm. Well, that's a great way of helping people sort of realize that, you know, the power is within us, and it's not something outside of us. It's not within our government. It's not, you know, in our jobs or with our boss, or, you know, it's really about us.
That's right, Lori. And all those things are significant. Our government, our jobs, our relationships, all those things are significant issues that we have to deal with. But the main import here is each person recognizing that you have a core nature, you have a purpose, your soul decided to come back into the body for some reason, and it's not just to pay the bills.
God, I hope so.
I could guarantee you, Lori, on your deathbed someday, your final thought is not going to be, damn, I just wish I had paid a few more bills. I just didn't do what I was here for.
Yeah, absolutely. So your journey began on harmonic convergence. Being an astrologer, what was the significance of that in astrology, and what is the significance of 2012 in astrology?
I think the harmonic convergence ushered in a 25-year purging process from 1987 to 2012, in which everything most wrong with our civilization had to be flushed up out of the woodwork so we could see it. Because back in 1987, the world at large could not see it. Mm-hmm. These things hadn't come out of the closet. We didn't know about things like corrupt voting machines and all kinds of things that have just kind of come out now. Instead of being on the fringes, it's in the mainstream awareness. And we're still in that period, but we're mostly through it because we really only have 4 years left between now and 2012. And the significance of that 25-year period from 1987 to 2012 is you can't get the world back on track until you see how far off it's gotten. We were kind of in denial. I would call it a post-1960s denial. If you can remember back into the 1970s and through much of the 80s, it was as if the world came down with a massive case of amnesia that the 60s had ever really happened. I mean, the world was busy pretending that love and peace never actually did happen. Mm-hmm. And going back to life as normal, except it wasn't normal. It was a mass delusion. And so this 25-year period that we're almost out of but have 4 years left has been the time to bring it to our awareness what has to be changed. And on an individual, personal level, each person's responsibility here is to purge themselves of that part of your existence that doesn't truly serve anything. If you're in a marriage that's not real, that isn't fully working, then change it or get out of it. If you're in a job that's all it's doing is draining your life force and paying the bills, then find some way to transform your work so that it's actually feeding you, that it's actually serving something other than just simply putting bread on the table. This process of purging involves a kind of a fearless self-confrontation that my teacher in our mystery school in the Santa Cruz Mountains was constantly presenting to us. Why are you here? What are you here to do? How long are you going to wait to do it? And that kind of confrontation is necessary in order to jerk people out of this massive trance state, this trance of normalcy, in which we've just kind of forgotten who we are and what we're doing, and we've been going along with a great hoax, a great illusion. So I wrote my book as a way to really wake people up and inspire them that there's got to be something more.
Mm. And how big was it to meet your teacher? I mean, you almost have a guru-teacher affinity, or at least that, not necessarily devotion, but that love that one may have when they choose a guru.
It was incredible that day in December of 1987 when I met my teacher, Elias Lonsdale. He was a massive man, a huge guy, very tall and very soft-spoken and very gentle, and yet the words that he spoke to me during that first deep visionary astrology reading just went right into my soul. And from that moment on, I felt I needed to study with this man. I needed to work with him. It took a few more years, as you can tell from reading my book, before I was actually able to study with him. But the significance of having met him and having him still be in my life, in fact, he's just about to launch his first teleclass next week, a 12-week series. The significance of having him in my life is when you find somebody of penetrating insight and intelligence, who looks into you and sees your blind spots, your flaws, your weaknesses, and your faults, but then penetrates deeper to see your inner nature, your gift, your essential nature, your core genius. And that person stands for you through the years. He stands for your right to fully become who you are, no matter how many times you go back to them, caught up in your own crazy mania in love and sex and money, and he continues to listen to you and champion your right to fully become the person you are, it makes an immense difference.
Mm.
That's what my teacher did for me and taught me how to do for others. So in the last 21 years, I've been doing soul-level astrology sessions, giving to other people what my teacher gave to me that day.
Hmm. Well, now a big part of your book is on relationships, and it seemed to be one of your greatest tests.
Tremendously so. I my chart is filled with Libra and Scorpio and Sagittarius and Capricorn, all the signs of passion and desire and sensuality and love and lust and relationship. And love has been my greatest teacher. I mean, it really, really has kicked my ass so long. And yet, at the same time, I couldn't help but recognizing that only somebody who loved with such fierce devotion as I did and such such willingness to get my lesson and to never give up could actually break through to a whole new understanding of love, a whole new level of relationship. And again, largely from my own personal experiences, but with the help of my teacher, I was able to recognize that there was something valid in me, that it wasn't just a tremendous sequence of losses, that it wasn't just going through my 20s and my 30s and my 40s just losing love over and over and over, that there was something deeper driving me. And ultimately, in fact, that's what won out, because I've been incredibly happy in love for the last couple of years, and I just had my second child 7 weeks ago.
Oh, and congratulations.
Thank you. And we're living here in southern Vermont, really experiencing a version of togetherness that I was only able to get to by having gone through all those other earlier stages and learned from them and grown from them.
Yeah, I think that's really what relationships are all about. It. I mean, ideally, they get you to uncover who you are versus necessarily connecting with another person. But it's allowing that connection to create a connection with yourself so that you can really understand who you are.
And that's exactly what Elias told me all those years ago,
yeah,
that the main significance of love is to introduce you to yourself through the other person, just as you said.
Yeah.
And once somebody recognizes that, then they stop blaming the other person and they stop making a victim out of themselves, and they begin to recognize that the reason why they continue to get in certain patterns, even with new people in different places, is because those people are reflecting some part of themselves that they haven't yet resolved. And when I was able to take love that way and recognize that all of those women were trying to get some messages through to me, then my love history kind of shifted and led to the point where it's at right now, which is extremely fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. But you really have to work through your stuff to get there.
Yeah, I had a lot of stuff to work through.
And I think everybody does.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly, it was a long journey, but it was so worth it.
And it is nice that you know, have been able to be so open about it. So, because I think a lot of people experience very similar things, and to be able to read something and go, oh my goodness, I really relate to this and connect with this. And, you know, if you've gone through it, then there is hope for me. But also, you know, just to allow people to, you know, realize, maybe laugh at themselves, maybe, you know, allow them to sort of work through some of their own stuff so that they get it. Because I don't think a lot of people realize just how much this is about us and our own personal growth, as well as, you know, seeing God or Goddess through someone else's eyes.
The main thrust of our work in the Mystery School, Lori, was that all the greatest spiritual teachings in the world are only worth something if they help you become a better human being here and now in the physical plane. And that understanding of how to really bring your full nature into love, into relationship, in the here and now, and use all those spiritual tools as a way to become more loving, more present, more alive inside, in the depth of that message, the collective karma of the world can turn around. The stuck state of humanity can loosen up. The idea of our world as becoming a true place of love and peace becomes something brought down to the microcosm of you each day in your own ordinary existence, rather than the slightly escapist idea to attain some incredible nirvana state somewhere else in some other planet, in some other life, someday. It brings the principles down into your gut and your heart and your sexuality and your very humanness.
Yeah. Well, that leads us into the next part that I want to talk about, which was karma and dark karma and how, you know, how we have these lessons. But, you know, talk about what it meant to you, our karma.
Well, what I learned about karma is that there's nothing judgmental or punitive about karma. Karma tends to get a bad rap as like bad karma because, you know, like you did something bad to somebody in another life, and then maybe in this life now, they're going to have to do something bad to you to get back or whatever. And that's not at all what karma is. Karma is celestial physics. It's simple cause and effect added into the reincarnational cycle. So that, you know, in this lifetime, just in one life, if you grew up in a rough neighborhood in Detroit and you grew up around a lot of gangsters and a lot of prejudice, that's your upbringing, and those effects are going to impact you. The choices you make, the place you live, and the things you do are going to lead to other things that at some point in your life are either going, you're either going to resist that and use it as something to push off of and grow out of it, or you're going to get caught in the same dark cycles. Karma is that same principle just applied over the course of many lives of reincarnation. And so things that you did in earlier lives, places where you didn't fully yet get clear, they're going to come back again over and over and over until you awaken in the same patterns that previously you were unconscious in. That's why you've seen this in your life, I'm sure, where you yourself or friends of yours or family members, they go into a love relationship that looks at like it's great and it ends up being a disaster, and they learn the lesson, and then later they start another love relationship with a totally different person that this time seems to be completely different, and somewhere along the line the same thing happens.
Yeah.
Why? Is it because they have poor choice? Is it because they're masochistic? Is it because there's something wrong with all men? I mean, you know, none of those things explain it. It's because they're going to recreate their own internal karmic patterns out there in the world over and over and over until they awaken within the depths of the very same place where they're the most unawake. And so karma is spirit's way of teaching us that our thoughts, our intentions, our inner energy is extremely important in co-creating every external event that happens in the world. This takes back the power to change our life without waiting for the government to have to change, to change our relationships without waiting for our partner to have to change our world without waiting for the big, powerful millionaire somewhere to have to change things.
So it's about taking responsibility and actually walking the path that is sort of was stuck in a pattern.
Exactly. And it's also about recognizing that the pattern itself exists for a deeper spiritual purpose, and that the pattern is not a sign that there's something wrong with you, that there's something wrong with life, that there are no gods, that there's something wrong with all women, that there's something the matter with all, you know, Arabs or Israelis or wherever. The patterns of intense difficulty are invitations for us to awaken and turn the very pressure that meets us into a force that can awaken a deeper force in our soul. And once that deeper force in your soul awakens, it's not as if all your problems go away. It's rather that now you become so rooted in a deeper existence that these challenges that are coming to meet you now can be met by a greater force within your own nature, which recognizes that you are so much more than your own limitations, and that a lot of those limitations were illusions that you swallowed, lies that you have in your mind that there's something wrong with you. You know, like if black people in our country were told for decades that they were inferior, and it's very hard to then believe something like you could be a president of the United States, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, our greater civilization has been laboring under the illusion that where these limited beings, our modern fiction, is that there's these great, tremendous forces out there in the world, and where these kind of pathetic little beings who just sort of don't have a lot to do with it. And when a deeper activation, a deeper awakening occurs of the soul, a person becomes inspired. You become activated on such a root level that you have much more leverage to apply. So it's not as if all your problems dissolve when you have this kind of profound awakening and transformation. It's that you now get to separate your meaningless problems from those difficulties and challenges that can hone you into an instrument for a greater purpose.
Hmm. Nicely said. You talk, let me talk. Atlantis, a lot of people say that 2012 is when we have the same or similar energy that we had when we were in Atlantis. And you talk about, or there's some talking in the book with regards to how Atlantis, there was a lot of power, and then their ego got involved and it had a dark turn, and that right now, between 1987 and 2012, we're sort of writing the karma from Atlantis.
Yes, that's what we were taught in our mystery school, that the main karma of humanity was launched in Atlantis.
Hmm.
And the main species karma is the elite few lording over the many.
Right.
And that karma, which began in Atlantis, has recreated itself many, many times mm-hmm. down through history, of the elite few lording over the many. And in recent U.S. politics, especially with the Bush administration, mm-hmm. it was as if that karma, that original Atlantean karma, had to recreate itself one more time in such an obvious way that even the sleeping collective awareness would have to wake up to this. And this is, in fact, what happened. I think if John Kerry had gotten elected 4 years ago, this wouldn't have happened.
Right.
But I think because the Bush administration had 4 more years to tell their lies and to screw up just about everything they put their hands on, the dark could get so dark that it would force a corresponding forced to come out of the mainstream awareness, which is, wait a minute, even I can't sit still and just do nothing and say nothing at the sheer destructive ignorance of my so-called leaders. And so this karma from Atlantis, where the few lord over the many, had to happen one more time in our time in order to conjure a corresponding force of awakening that could say, wait a minute, this is not right. I don't have to put up with this. I don't have to just sit there and watch TV night after night and go along with this, you know, people pointing to the sky and saying down, and everybody says, yeah, down, and people point to the ground and say up, and well, yeah, and everybody says up. And until that karma gets dramatized on the world stage, it's hard to realize how each of us support that kind of thing. And once you get to see that, wait a minute, I haven't been fully following my truth. I haven't been standing up for the things I believe in. I haven't come once again to really participate in recreating this world, in recreating my existence based on truth, love, peace and inspiration, just like they talked about in the 60s, just like Christ talked about. I haven't done what the visionaries really told us to do about these higher truths. Then, when it's out pictured in a government way, on the mass screen of mass awareness, that things are that bad once again. I cannot let these imbeciles run things anymore. It conjures up a force which in America has kind of made the miraculous just come true, which is a black man being elected president. There were so many people who thought that could never happen because of prejudice and because of corrupt power structures and corrupt voting machines. And yet it shows that the dreams of those civil rights workers 40, 50 years ago in the South, that their passion and their inspiration, and many of them gave their lives or suffered beatings. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Many of them, that the vision that they had, it was not wasted, that we can turn this karma around, that it doesn't always have to be the mainstream of people just going to serve the rich and the powerful and the elite and the delusionals. And this is what's awakening. Things had to get darker before they could get lighter in order to conjure up an opposite force of awakening. And that's what's happening now. People are starting to awaken.
Mm-hmm. In a big way.
Yeah.
In a big way. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Atlantis and Lemuria, and I thought it was very interesting that your mystery school, you know, believes that Atlantis was part of the fall and Lemuria was part of the garden. What do you say to something like that unless you have, you know, some past life memories of what both of those were like? It's a very interesting concept of us moving back, I guess, into, I guess, a Lemurian time, or finding the garden that is within us and seeing that garden transform.
Yes, seeing the garden transform. And Plato wrote about Atlantis, and Edgar Cayce talked about Lemuria. And down through history, there's been whispers and visions and suggestions of these places. And I think that the main reason why we studied those things in our mystery school is in order to awaken people to an understanding that if you follow your inner light, if you light up inside, if you live the true life that you believe in and refuse to settle for less, you will restore a version of an earlier state of existence in which we did live in harmony. We weren't at odds with our environment. We weren't at odds with each other, and mostly we weren't at odds with ourselves. And in our current time, we have become split from ourselves so that the higher parts of our nature can't always fulfill those dreams because other parts of us go into resistance. We ambush ourselves. We demean ourselves. We dishonor ourselves. We ignore ourselves. We fail to listen to our higher intuitive voice over and over and over. And we substitute lesser voices, voices of government, voices of false education, voices of false media, TV voices. And in the banishing of those artificial voices from our nature and releasing a clear inner path, we restore a measure of an earlier time in human evolution when we were not at odds with ourselves, when we were not at odds with each other and with our world. We bring some of that back again as a basis for moving forward. We didn't study Atlantis and Lemuria, in other words, to turn back the clock to a pre-industrial kind of a situation. We studied those earlier times to draw forth just enough of that experience through the ages into the now so we could turn around and aim it toward the future.
Mm. You talk a lot, and I know that how important this is, but engaging with everything. You know, a lot of times in some of the New Age groups, you know, we go up instead of stay in our body. We, you know, we focus on, you know, the positive, beautiful qualities instead of feeling what's really going on. And we wear these masks and we hide behind them and we think we're being detached and we think, you know, we're being so evolved by not, you know, really getting into it. But I mean, this was what your book was about. It was really about engaging into everything, how our soul craves, you know, a clear space and change, and it's the only constant in the universe. And when we come out of this, when we really get into that place where we can really engage with everything, we're never the same person.
This was another main principle I learned from my teacher, Elias Lonsdale, and put into my book, 2012, Crossing the Bridge to the Future, is about crossing the bridge into not a future state of unicorns and rainbows and some happy ever after twilight, but rather that the here and now, ordinary human existence has the capacity to be something exciting, challenging, fertile, imaginative, inspirational. And all of our work in that mystery school class and all of my work with all of my soul level astrology clients that I work with all over the world is aimed toward firing people up to become so actively engaged with your own existence from a core level that we break through the current crisis of meaning. And the meaning results from your willingness to take life up on a deep level with a soul passion, with a hunger. And in that respect, we were taught just the opposite of what many spiritual teachings say, which is that Earth existence is a big illusion, physicality is a real drag, someday we're going to be on the ninth level of the Pleiades in a transcendent state of enlightenment as disembodied, beautifully harmonious souls who will have nothing to do with sex and food and Harley Davidsons and Earth and Republicans. And the truth of that is that most of those spiritual teachings are delusional and dangerous, because those very same people who could be most instrumental in turning around this whole mess for the rest of us end up feeling there's something wrong with being human and with being alive. The way that I wrote my book, the way that I did, Lori, by presenting my sexual escapades, my relationship challenges, my challenge to earn money, my humanness, my weakness, my flaws, my shadow, my struggles, as well as the greater teachings, was to counteract that kind of disembodied escapist spirituality, mm-hmm. which I feel is very dangerous, and to present a whole other version of spirituality, which is that we are not here to get out of here, to become transcendent, discorporeal beings who can float around, but that we're rather here to get into here. And that the more that we bring the full power of our soul into the physical plane, the here and now itself transforms because we bring a greater force to it. And that we don't have to wait for some higher vibration someday on the Pleiades to all become these ascended masters. That Earth itself is actually a tremendous arena for the full awakening of spirit and matter. As Elias would say, Earth isn't the booby prize we get when we fail to ascend. Earth is paradise. To be physically alive, and I know that everybody listening to me on your radio station now is physically alive because they got ears and they're hearing me. To be physically alive is a great privilege and honor. It's an inspiration. It's a tremendous attainment for the soul to come down from eternity into the womb and be born into a physical body. And that's the first birth. But when we have a second birth, which is an awakening during the course of our life to our deeper nature, then we get to inhabit ordinary existence in such a way that it becomes more than ordinary, that we live in the world but not of it, that we recognize that we are spiritual beings who have chosen to have a human experience in order to bring the love that we are out into the physical plane, and in order to receive the gifts of the physical plane back into our soul. And then the exchange becomes something very rich and very meaningful, and we begin to live for the present rather than being stuck on the past or just always in search of some imaginary future.
Mm-hmm. I guess one of the more difficult areas in your book is in a chapter called Dancing with Death, and thereafter when we talk about the process where of your teacher's wife and how she went through, seemingly becoming fully enlightened or fully in the now and engaged with everything, and for her to pass, and then it having a nice ending with her, continually to communicate in the next life or the next stage. But talk about what that means, because we all seem to have this great fear of what death is, and it's really part of understanding, what we need to do to actually really engage in this body.
I think that the fear of death is actually a fear of life in disguise, and that you lose your fear of death when you fully become alive while you're alive. The gift of being alive in the body, including its duality and its limitations, is that while we're here, the physical plane, our sensory awareness, the way that we taste and touch and see and smell and feel our way through the world, is this rich arena of interactive forces. And in this state of being alive in the body, we tend to forget that we're also one with the cosmos, that we're a spirit nature, which is limitless, and our human nature has a limit to it. There's a time limit to it. There's physiological limits to it. It's kind of difficult for me to fly around like a sparrow. I tend to walk like a man. and I'm going to be alive for just a certain amount of time and not longer. And yet, there's this other part of me which is already connected with the whole universe, which can see or sense into the future, into the past. I have a telepathic awareness. I can be in a contact with somebody on the other part of the world. I can see things before they happen. There's a part of me beyond my limited self which connects with my greater self. And when we're afraid of death, it's usually because we haven't used our full sensory apparatus as a human being yet. And so there's this sense in most of us that someday maybe we'll fully live our life. Someday when I win the lottery and make $1 million, or when I find the girl of my dreams, or someday when things change in our government, that I will then become fully alive. And this is the way that most people live our lives. It's kind of on a delayed payment plan, that someday this is all going to pay off. And meanwhile, the now usually gets relegated to this kind of in-between state that's not really here nor there, but just kind of trying to get somewhere else. That's usually a fear of being alive, of being afraid to walk up to the person that you love and say, I love you. Be holding back from fully giving yourself the chance to be a concert pianist. Thinking that you're too old to go back and be a concert ballerina or whatever you want to do, and putting off, like, someday when you have a vacation or when you no longer have to deal with your relatives, you'll get to this other state. That tends to produce a fear of death, because I think that fear really is, what if you die before you actually fully do what you came here to do? But once you have an awakening that you get to live your life fully here and now, regardless of how much money you have, regardless of how many diseases you have, regardless of whether you're being loved or not, regardless of whether the relatives are a pain in the neck or not, you get to be alive fully now, here, in this moment. And once you live that way and you practice living that way each day over and over and over, and you catch yourself falling asleep at the wheel and you jerk yourself back awake to the deeper engagement with existence, you tend to lose your fear of death because you're no longer afraid of fully being alive. And then it doesn't matter if you die.
So we're in this heightened, accelerated state, moving towards 2012. I'm going to guess it's not going to end once December 21st, 2012 happens, that there's still going to be people waking up, around that time, if not, a lot of people waking up around that time. But I think it's a process of moving and waking and getting into this, this new heightened state. I mean, it's been crazy energy these last couple of months where it's really been, extreme.
Yes. And I think that the intention of 2012 is that after 2012, we will not be dealing with such a heavy chunk of world karma anywhere, that's going to break off and dissolve, and that we will have a much freer ability to actually live into the dreams that we hold dear in our hearts, that the world can become a better place, that you don't have to pretend to be this completely artificial person in order to get your needs met in this world, that you don't have to live a lie or a half-truth. So the intention after 2012, I don't see 2012 as transforming us out of the physical plane so that we're all these little light creatures dancing around like butterflies. And I don't see it in terms of world civilization going through a tremendous apocalypse and then we're going to all be living in caves or something. I really think that after 2012, we are intended to engage with each other in a state of greater truthfulness, greater realness, that there would be less holding the species back in these artificial states, in these fractured states, in these divided, broken states that we're in, and there was going to be more of a sense of unity that we are all in this together, that we can make this a better world, that we don't have to linger forever in ancient blood feuds of this race against that race and this ethnicity against that ethnicity and this religion against that religion, but that we can finally get past those ridiculous, illusory differences into an actual manifestation of our togetherness, of what we have in common, of that the whole world is a vast organism that we're each a part of, and what hurts one person hurts another, and what helps one person helps the other.
Okay, I just have to ask out of interest, the age of Aquarius, I mean, haven't we been talking about this since the 60s? Is it really at 2012, or have we already entered it? What is this great mystery called the age of Aquarius?
Well, when ages are 2,100 years long, or approximately, there's no clear set day that day we went into Aquarius, and now we're out of Pisces. And so there's been various speculation from the 1960s through the present moment as to whether we've actually crossed into that age or not. I feel that by 2013, we enter the age of Aquarius. Mm-hmm. We're no longer on the doorstep. We actually cross in. Mm-hmm. And the single most measurement of the age of Aquarius is that the power and the knowledge and the illumination get spread through the masses rather than being held in small pockets of the elite chosen few. And as power and consciousness and illumination gets spread around the world through the benefit of the internet, through the benefit of a kind of a worldwide awakening, people reaching out to each other in the name of peace, then this Aquarian age, this new 2,100-year-long period that's coming in, will truly get launched.
Hmm. Okay, that sounds fair. So you think one of the greatest obstacles that we have to overcome, and you sort of talked about it earlier, is our fear of power, or our fear of, we're terrified of the light more than the darkness.
Yeah, this is one of the main things that is holding us back, is that it's kind of a very scary proposition to claim the fact that I have an ultimate power and responsibility over the way things go. It's way easier to kind of avoid that kind of a confrontation, that kind of a self-confrontation, to imagine myself powerless, to imagine myself just kind of not mattering that much. But when you consider the fact that you can change the world, it's happened over and over again that individuals have changed the course of history. Especially groups of dedicated individuals pooling together. And when you accept that, one of the first things that happens is it becomes very scary, because that means that now you have to live consciously in the places where previously you were largely unconscious or you just didn't even care. So to have to care on a level equivalent to the amount of consciousness you have and to the power that you're willing to claim, that's a kind of extended initiation into recognizing who you really are and what you're going to do about it. And so the way to grasp the deeper responsibility that comes with that kind of a power is to realize that the only power that you have is the power that's been granted to you by spirit. It's not in everyone's destiny to become a John Lennon whose consciousness is going to change the whole world. It doesn't have to be. It's not in everybody's destiny to become a Mother Teresa whose willpower changes the world. But in your own way, you are here to change the world. And once you recognize the fact that the grand design is in the hands of greater beings than you or I, and that your power is the power to step up and fulfill your role. It's similar to singing in a choir. You know, when I go to sing, all I can do is fulfill the baritone. There's nothing I can do about the soprano. I just have to trust that someone else is going to fill that one. But I could do the best baritone that I can. And I can, in the releasing of my own true voice, of my own true nature, of all my power, I can trust that that may help to inspire other people to do the same, and that the bigger picture is in the hands of spirit, but that down here on earth, I have a responsibility to fulfill my own true destiny, to live up to my own nature. And I don't have to ever contort myself to try and somehow manage to sing soprano.
And I guess that's where you talk a little bit about, you know, the becoming the selfless self, not the egoic self, and having self-mastery, which will be inward clarity.
Yes, and the selfless self is another concept I got from my teacher, Elias Lonsdale, which has to do with the fact that it's there's a kind of selfhood here that is not to do with ego. It's not about me being the greatest there ever was, but maybe it's about me being the greatest Mark Borax that there ever was. You know, maybe I can become the best at being myself. And that kind of a selfhood isn't about convincing the whole rest of the world how great I am. It's rather trusting that by freeing some dream from some creative spark inside myself, that will be contagious, and it will hopefully catalyze you not to be more like me, but to be more like you. And in this way, this selfless self, which is the principle of Leo in astrology. It's the Leo principle that the more authentically you become yourself, the more you force other people to become not more like you, which is the false egoic self, but more like who they are. This is the gift of relationship. If I'm fully being myself in relationship with you, Lori, it's not intended to make you more like me, but to make you more like yourself.
Right.
And that there's room for all of us here, that there's no scarcity, that me being more who I am does not dominate the airwaves in this kind of Hollywood ego way, but that me fully showing up frees the rest of everybody to fully become more of who they are. And that there's more than enough love to go around, and there's more than enough caring to go around, and that we're not in danger of somebody somehow breaking out of the lunatic asylum and actually becoming who they are, that's somehow going to stop other people. You know, that's what the ego does with these concepts, but the concept of the selfless self is that beyond ego, there's an authentic nature that you were born to fulfill. It's been in you since you incarnated, and it wants to come out.
And that's where we become free, when we can show up, and you mentioned all with all of our 12 senses. But that's really what freedom is about.
Yes, Rudolf Steiner found 12 senses, not just 5, and that when we fully show up as the living being that we are in the moment, that we then free those parts of ourself, our past lives and our ancestors and the people around us who have been just dying for a chance for they themselves to do the same thing, that the whole world kind of relaxes a bit when somebody actually shows up fully as who they are. I think that's the lore of sports. Like when you see Michael Jordan going up on a rebound, there's this sense of he was born to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this vicarious thrill that, well, you were born to do something too. It might not be Michael Jordan or John Lennon or Mark Borax, but there's some reason you were born. And that reason, whether it's subtle and small and intimate, or whether it's huge and sweeping and significant, is the meaning of your life. And the more you get out of your own way, the deeper authentic self gets to come through the egoic vessel.
And we're rich when we can recognize that we have so much more to give than we need to take.
That was the ultimate lesson of my story, which is, you know, for years, Lori, I thought I was really dysfunctional. I mean, it's only been since the book came out this year that my astrology practice has expanded to create a steady living wage. But for 21 years, I've done astrology, and I was fairly successful at it. But since my book came out, my astrology business has multiplied fivefold. I'm getting 5 times the readings I ever got from people all over the world who call me up. Some guy came here from Australia to get an in-person reading with me. Most people get readings by telephone. And for years, I thought, God, I can barely pay the rent. I can't seem to hang on to love. I've been, you know, chasing the goddess of love all my life. I just want to live happily ever after with a beautiful woman. I just want to give my life to the service of devotion to a woman. I just want to help people out. I've been writing books for more than 30 years. I wrote 20 books. None of them were published until this one was published. And yet the lesson that I come to at the end of my book is that wealth has nothing to do with the amount of money you have, but you become truly wealthy the moment when you realize that you have so much more to give to this world than you will ever need to take from it.
Beautiful. And I guess the last point I want to make is you see, and we've talked about it, that 2012 is a huge crossroads in our history, and that we have a key choice to make, which is a rare window of opportunity. And the choice is, will we emerge from the dark ages to write a new ending to humanity's countless variation on short-sightedness, self-sabotage, and greed? Will we quit pretending to be so much less than we are? Will we step up to fulfill our awesome potential as a species? Will we seize this unique moment and finally haul ourselves towards something infinitely more satisfying than replaying the same historical mistakes over and over?
Yes, and that's exactly what I feel about 2012, is we are all being offered a tremendous opportunity to change this world. You know, everybody who didn't believe a black man could be elected president of the United States, believe it. You can change the world. The world can change. Your efforts to fully be alive and to use your life for something of a greater use are not in vain. And if we make that choice, then the cosmic timings of 2012 are going to align with our own human willpower, and our own choices that we make will have a tremendous support for growing and growing and growing and catalyzing other people. You know, people all over the world now are being liberated. Black people in South America and in Africa are being liberated like crazy that my country elected a black man president, despite all the corrupt power structures and the corrupt voting machines and then the history of the Bush administration. We have still done the right thing. We have elected somebody who is a visionary, who is a black man, who has worked his way up in a lot of respects. And that is freeing the spirit of so many people all over the world who have been suffering under a sense of being less than, of being diminished. That means that the human soul is swelling up now, and the timings are right for us to use this choice point to come more into the truth of who we are.
Well, I can't believe an hour has gone by so quickly. It's been a very enchanting interview, and I recommend everybody to get the book 2012, Crossing the Bridge to the Future. Mark, why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you?
You can write me, you can click on my website, markborax.com, markborax.com. You can email me through the website. The book is published by Frog Books in conjunction with Random House. It's available on all the major outlets as well as Amazon.com. And on my website, you can sign up for a free monthly cosmic weather report that I email to people to let you know what's going on in the stars and how you can use it in order to really come alive yourself. So it's www.markborax.com.
Great. Well, I really enjoyed the interview, and I look forward to connecting with you in the future.
Laura, it's been great talking with you, and I appreciate the way that you really studied my book and asked me the questions that the book raised.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Thanks.
All right. Take care.
You too.